We move on to more uncertain ground with regard to certain historical figures who have been, by their own and others' description, indifferent or sometimes averse to music. It is possible that they were profoundly amusic. We have no evidence to either support or refute this possibility. It is difficult, for example, to know what to make of the peculiar omission of any reference to music in the work of the James brothers. There is only a single sentence devoted to music in the 1,400 pages of William James's Principles of Psychology, which treats virtually every other aspect of human perception and thought, and looking through biographies of him, I can find no reference to music. Ned Roram, in his diary, Facing the Night, observes the same striking absence in Henry James, that in none of his novels, and in none of the biographies, is there any mention of music. Perhaps the brothers grew up in a musicless household. Could lack of exposure to music in one's earliest years cause a sort of emotional amusia, as lack of language in the critical period may undermine linguistic competence for the rest of one's life? A different and rather sad phenomenon, a loss of feeling for music and much else, is expressed by Darwin in his autobiography. In one respect, my mind had changed during the last 20 or 30 years. Formerly, pictures gave me considerable and music very intense delight. But now I have almost lost my taste for pictures or music. My mind seems to have become a sort of machine for grinding general laws out of large collections of fact. The loss of these tastes, this curious and lamentable loss of the higher aesthetic tastes, is a loss of happiness, and may possibly be injurious to the intellect, and more probably to the moral character, by enfeebling the emotional part of our nature. And we are on much more complex ground when it comes to Freud, who, as far as one can judge from accounts, never listened to music voluntarily or for pleasure, and never wrote about music, though he lived in intensely musical Vienna. He would rarely and reluctantly let himself be dragged to an opera, and then only a Mozart one, and when he did, would use such occasions to think about his patients or his theories. Freud's nephew Harry, in a not entirely reliable memoir, My Uncle Sigmund, wrote that Freud despised music, and that the whole Freud family was very unmusical, but neither of these assertions seems to be true. A much more delicate and nuanced comment was made by Freud himself, on the only occasion on which he wrote about the subject, in the introduction of The Moses of Michelangelo. "I am no connoisseur in art. Nevertheless, works of art do exercise a powerful effect on me, especially those of literature and sculpture, less often of painting. I spend a long time before them, trying to apprehend them in my own way, i.e., to explain to myself what their effect is due to. Wherever I cannot do this, as for instance with music, I am almost incapable of obtaining any pleasure. Some rationalistic, or perhaps analytic, turn of mind in me rebels against being moved by a thing without knowing why I am thus affected, and what it is that affects me." I find this comment at once puzzling and rather poignant. One wishes that Freud might have been able, on occasion, to abandon himself to something as mysterious, as delightful, and, one would think, as unthreatening as music. Did he enjoy and respond to music as a boy, when he was not committed to explaining and theorizing? We know only that he was denied the pleasure of music as an adult. Perhaps indifference is not quite the word here, and the Freudian term resistance would be nearer the mark, resistance to the seductive and enigmatic power of music. And it may be that a similar resistance underlay Nabokov's disdainful comment that music affected him merely as an arbitrary succession of more or less irritating sounds. For many of us, the emotions induced by music may be overwhelming. A number of my friends who are intensely sensitive to music cannot have it on as background when they work. They must attend to music completely or turn it off, for it is too powerful to allow them to focus on other mental activities. States of ecstasy and rapture may lie in wait for us if we give ourselves totally to music. A common scene during the 1950s was to see entire audiences swooning in response to Frank Sinatra or Elvis Presley, seized by an emotional and perhaps erotic excitement so intense as to induce fainting. Wagner, too, was a master of the musical manipulation of emotions, and this, perhaps, is a reason why his music is so intoxicating to some and so hateful to others. Tolstoy was deeply ambivalent about music because it had, he felt, a power to induce in him fictitious states of mind, emotions and images that were not his own and not under his control. He adored Tchaikovsky's music, but often refused to listen to it, and in the Kreutzer Sonata he described the seduction of the narrator's wife by a violinist and his music. The two of them play Beethoven's Kreutzer Sonata together, and this music is so powerful, the narrator comes to think, that it can change a woman's heart and cause her to be unfaithful. The story ends with the outraged husband murdering his wife, though the real enemy, he feels, the enemy he cannot kill, is the music.